All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire Football Podcast Edition. Previewing. We just did the recap, Matt. We're previewing games now, right?
Is that
the
plan? Yes, we are.
Not reviewing, not recapping, previewing. Well, here's what we're going to do here. This is going to be either one long podcast you want to listen to, but I also break it up because these games were pre-recording, spoiler, week ahead. We're going to be talking about the Hawaii Bowl, which is not Christmas Eve, unfortunately. The First Responders Bowl, excuse me, Serve Pro First Responders Bowl. Boise State, Boston College, and then Arkansas State, Nevada, and the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl. So if you listen to this show, we'll go chronological order, and then we will break them up so you can pick and choose. Easy enough, right, Matt?
Exactly.
All right, so website, MWR.com. There is a website, MWCWire.com, where we have random deals. I just said the website, so I have to say what it is now, Matt, because that's how it works, I guess. I could edit, but I'm not. So if you head out there, tickets, Sling TV, Fubo, all sorts of random stuff. So check that out if you want to have some fun, I guess, or save some money. It's holiday season, so boom. First game, long roundabout way to get to games because that's what we do here. So first off, Matt, I am deeply disappointed the Hawaii Bowl is not Christmas Eve.
You mean the SoFi Hawaii Bowl?
Oh, excuse me, SoFi Hawaii Bowl. Yeah, I guess we got to bring that up too. Is that speaker, right, SoFi?
I think so.
Good. Maybe get some good speakers. Because it's Christmas Eve, you can kind of avoid a few people you don't want to talk to.
That's true.
But it's December 22nd, 8:30 p.m. Saturday, which is, I believe, after some NFL games. I believe they have doubleheader.
So. We should mention that's 8 p.m. 8:30 what is that, Central Time? Well, it says 8:30 Central Time, so that'd be 7:30 Mountain and 6:30 Pacific.
Actually, it's what website are you using? Maybe my website's wrong.
Oh, I don't know. I'm just assuming.
Assuming.
I see CT, and I assume that means Central Time.
It does, but it's 8:30 Mountain, 7:30 Pacific. So it's not. You can actually see Hawaii football, Matt, with the sun up. You can see what Aloha Stadium looks like during the daytime. That'll be a treat.
On ESPN, too. Did we mention that?
That's right. It's on ESPN. So here's the game. It's Louisiana Tech. Hawaii is a slim one-point favorite, over under 62. Louisiana Tech, apparently I've been told that this should be like the biggest rival ever for Hawaii.
That's true. I mean, like I said, we mentioned it in the preview. This is a throwback to the old WAC days.
It is a throwback to the old WAC days. I did talk to Tanner Spearman, who's going to – I did a Q&A with him, so he'll get some stuff out on the website via him and questions I asked. He's not super familiar with it, but he did say Louisiana Tech was the second biggest rival to Hawaii, only behind Fresno State.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
Is there a trophy involved in this game? They were a rival at some point.
In this game? I don't think so.
Besides the Hawaii Bowl trophy?
Besides the Hawaii Bowl trophy.
You never know. I guess it's true because Texas, Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game, we're not giving up the golden hat, whatever, whoever won that one. So no trophy, but this game, they did play one of the best games ever in the WAC. Wasn't it like some multi-overtime game that had like 100 combined points?
Well, if you recall Hawaii's Sugar Bowl run back in 2007, they played a barn burner 45-44.
That's what it was.
Which was, I think, their closest call of that season.
It was like a top 20 La Tech team as well.
Yeah.
So they've had some good teams. Like I remember they nearly beat Texas A&M and Johnny Manziel a couple years ago. They're known for, when Sonny Dykler's their coach, scoring lots of points. And this team is they're 7-5, so they're okay this year.
This year, hard to say what they're known for.
True, because they not scored a ton. Like they've 30 points here, 21 versus LSU. They beat North Texas by 2 points. They're sort of familiar with that if you watch Utah State game. They give up 3 points to like UTSA or Rice. They give up 13, but then they lose to Western Kentucky or Southern Miss, who are both decent teams. And so as for what this team does well, they're just a 7-5 team, which means they're okay. They don't throw the ball a ton, and they don't run the ball a ton either.
I mean, if you look at their stat profile, it's hard to find something that stands out.
That's my point.
You know, if I'm thinking about this game, one thing that I'm looking forward to doing or to seeing is how Jamar Smith responds, because a lot of the coverage out of Ruston is that Skip Holtz expects him to do more. And if you haven't watched La Tech a lot this year, first of all, I don't blame you. But Jamar Smith's been okay. You know, he has a 14-9 touchdown to interception ratio. He has 57% completion rate. He has a sack rate that's right around the national average. You know, he contributed about 5.5 yards per carry on the ground. So he could do a little bit with his legs. He could do a little bit with his arm. But I don't think there's any question that he really struggled down the stretch for the Bulldogs. Nobody in Conference USA threw the ball more than he did in November, but the results of that were kind of mixed. As far as 14 guys who qualified by on what is it, CFBstats.com, he was 10th on that list.
Not great.
It, yeah, so I mean, his completion percentage is okay, 57%, but he only had two touchdowns in November and he had three interceptions. So he wasn't really doing as much as I think a lot of people would have hoped he would. And that has kind of been one of the overarching stories of the Louisiana Tech season, because as far as passer rating goes, he's only cracked 120 one time in the last six games. And so when I start looking at this matchup, I look at, how much hay is he going to be able to make against a Hawaii defense that, let's not beat around the bush. They have had their adventures.
They're bad. You can say they're bad. It's okay. You can say they're not good.
Yeah, it's so it's a cut. I don't know if I want to say that Louisiana Tech's passing game is a weakness, but he is going to have to make plays against a Hawaii passing defense, for instance, that on the year ranked 10th as far as opponents' passer rating. They've only had four interceptions on the season. They've given up 27 passing touchdowns. So I want to see if Smith can make plays with his arm against a defense that's been prone to giving up a lot of big plays.
You know what? He's gonna have a big game because that's what Hawaii defense does. They allow bad or not bad quarterbacks, but quarterbacks that have career high games.
Well, I mean, the only reason I question that is because it's not like Conference USA has a lot of outstanding defenses.
Sure, there's that as well, yeah.
And the scoring offense hasn't really been all that great. Like, they've only scored more than 21 points once in the last five games. They only scored 31 against UTEP. They only scored 31 against Texas San Antonio. So it's not like it's not like they've been facing a lot of juggernauts on defense. They just haven't really been the kind of scoring offense that I think, looking back on recent history, we've been accustomed to. They've really struggled on offense overall. Their S&P plus ranking is 109, if that tells you anything.
Not good. And one thing I'm looking at as well, like their running game isn't spectacular. They have Jacquizz, or excuse me, Jacquizz Darcy there. I'm looking at how he's played. Like he only has like he missed two games, sitting at 610 yards. I'm trying to look around to see what they're doing because three of his past four games had carries of 3, 5, and 2. And so I and they had 80 yards versus Rice. And like their next running back isn't anything spectacular. So I don't know who's gonna run the ball. He's still there's no injury. I'm like, okay, he's been didn't play the last two games. He's still listed atop the depth chart as their starting running back. And so I it's not like they also have a like a committee to run it because they have like Cam McKnight, Israel Tucker both have combined about 670. So I don't know what they're doing on the ground.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to say
Like
because, like I said, they don't really stand out one way or the other. I think maybe another guy you'd want to watch is Adrian Hardy, who did crack 1,000 yards through the air.
that's the guy, yeah.
Yeah, and he's the only guy among the five guys who have at least 30 targets in this offense to crack 14 yards per catch.
So this is interesting. So I don't know like what they do offensively. Like here's the thing, they'll be somebody will stand out whether it's receiver whether it's who knows Israel Tucker who had 10 carries and 39 yards and a catch in their season finale versus WKU Western Kentucky. There's going to be guys who stand out have big games. I just don't think we know who it is outside of like Hardy. Anybody else like even like Teddy Vail 60 like they passed the ball out. Those two guys over 120 combined receptions. So those are going to be the two main targets who Hawaii needs to figure out and guard and go up against, especially Hardy, 15 yards a catch. It's a pretty big deal. And so I think we both know they're going to be good offensively. We just don't know how they're going to be good, really, overall.
Yeah, I think the bigger question is how is Hawaii's offense going to look? Because they did struggle a lot down the stretch, and I think as we talked about before, maybe that has to do with the level of competition they were facing in November. But I think if you're a Hawaii fan, I think you can be encouraged by the fact that they were able to rebound quite a bit against San Diego State in that finale. They were able to get back to throwing the football pretty much all over the place. And Cole McDonald cracked 60%, I think, for the first time in 3 or 4 weeks in that last game. So If he can get back to what he was doing earlier in the year, that's going to be a huge deal for them. One of the other matchups that I'm really interested in watching is left tackle Eli Manning against Jalen Ferguson. Because that guy is really good.
Yeah, Ferguson is amazing. Like, one of the questions I ask, well, he's it's his last game. He apparently he needs. Did you know he's 2 sacks away from surpassing Charles Suggs for the NCAA career sacks record?
I did not know that.
So I think he also leads the country in sacks as well.
15 and 23 and a half tackles for loss.
He's a guy, and like I mentioned, part of the Q&A I did, we'll go up later. They like to create havoc, sack the quarterback. They have top 15 in total sacks, obviously due to Ferguson there. They have guys who have a double-digit pass breakups, a couple guys with multiple picks, and it's crazy. Their defense is going to be tested because it also depends what Hawaii offense shows up, right? Because they haven't been what they were the first month of the season. They've been a bit better of late, and assuming Cole McDonald's going to be the main guy because they have been going back and forth. But if they can't protect him, because we've seen when McDonald gets pressured, he makes errors and makes bad plays. And so it'll be, you got to protect him, man. You got to protect him somehow.
I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see what the running game is able to do against this defensive line because, as good as Ferguson is, it's not just him. They rank 22nd overall in defensive line havoc rate. And while Ferguson obviously leads the way with those double digit TFLs, the other guys on the line are pretty good too. Willie Baker has 6.5 tackles for loss, so does Emmanuel Turner. Jordan Bradford has 7 tackles for a loss. So it's going to be really interesting to watch to see if Nick Rolovich just kind of says screw it and abandons the running game more or less in the same way that he did against San Diego State because they didn't really run the ball all that often. I think McDonald threw the ball 46 times, and the only guy with more than 10 carries in that game was Miles Reed. He only had 12 attempts. Between him and Fred Hawley, they only ran it 17 times. I almost wonder if that's the same kind of game plan you're going to see in this game, where they just come out swinging, taking shots down the field. And if they do, the other big if in this game is the fact that Louisiana Tech does have a pretty good secondary, too. Maybe they don't have one guy who really jumps off the stat sheet like Ferguson does, but they're even better as far as havoc rate among their defensive backs. They rank 11th in the country. And so I'm very interested to see how they come out and try to defend against Hawaii's slot backs, John Orsua, Cedric Berg, the dynamic duo. Most of the talent in the Louisiana Tech secondary is actually on the outside. Amik Robertson, for instance, he had 7.5 tackles for loss, but he also led the team with 12 pass breakups and tied for, actually, no, he had 2 interceptions as well. It wasn't tied for the team lead. But are they going to move him inside to contend with Ursua and Bird? Are they going to keep him on the outside? So to me, it's going to be a really interesting chess match to watch.
It will be. And then they also have 10 picks as well overall. So they got multiple guys, interceptions. Abandoning the run is iffy because that's usually when Hawaii's been better, when they actually can have a running game. I have no doubt they'll take shots on field. They probably go for it on 4th and 2 at a weird spot in the field and hope Rolo gets it because that's kind of what he does. He's a risky Rolo, I guess. He does stuff like that. But even though they did against San Diego State, I think they still need to have some sort of running game.
No,
They
I mean, I
have
think that's
to.
a fair point. I mean, because if you look at what they've done on the season, if you just break down the production on the ground by wins and losses, in the 8 games they've won, they've averaged 4.3 yards per carry, which is not spectacular, but I think it gives them the kind of balance that they really need. In the 5 games that they've lost, they've been under 3 yards per carry.
Yeah, so also one thing to note, I don't think this will be a shootout because if it is a shootout, Hawaii's going to win. If it's a low scoring game, that gives Louisiana Tech the opportunities because like we mentioned, their offense is okay. And there's no, like I said, outside of them passing to Hardy, they don't really have Invel a bit. They don't really have anything consistent. Also, I guess real quick note on Dance, I guess he has been dinged up a little bit, but that's not the only reason he hasn't been playing. He hasn't been playing great the past month. But I'm going to say if it's a lot of points, Hawaii's going to win. I just don't know if Hawaii. Maybe the month off will do them great because they haven't played since Thanksgiving weekend. Maybe they're fully healthy and will do what they did versus Navy versus Colorado State in the first month of the year and put up 50 points. or
I
40
think
points.
Louisiana Tech's going to win the kind of game that's a lot like the Army game.
Low scoring game.
Yeah, because Hawaii only ran 45 plays in that game,
Oh, jeez.
if you can believe that. And Army was really able to contain the running game. I forgot about this. Cole McDonald and Dayton Peruta only had 3 carries apiece, and that was a team high in that game.
That
They were really imbalanced in that game too. And even though McDonald still ran the ball or still threw for over 300 yards, he took 3 sacks in that game as well. So I think if Louisiana Tech is looking for a blueprint to follow to try to win this game, it's going to be that. It's going to be putting pressure on McDonald, using the fact that they probably will come out and throw the football a lot to their advantage.
All right, so what's your score prediction here?
Well, should we give S&P Plus and all that too
Oh,
first?
of course, I'm getting a step ahead of
So
myself. Go with that first.
S&P Plus has this as Louisiana Tech 31, Hawaii 29.
So, right on brand with the 1 point Hawaii favorite at the
Pretty
moment.
much, yeah.
So, when you look at, let me go to my good old team rankings, NumberFire. They have Hawaii winning team rankings 31-3 to 30.6, NumberFire 31-6 to 29-1.
Interesting.
So it's a tight game. Over under 61, which makes sense because it could be, like I said, I don't know if either. I don't know if. Here's my thing. Hawaii's better odds of getting to 30 points than Louisiana Tech is.
Yeah.
However, they're playing the Hawaii defense, which is the X factor in doing all that. I'm hesitant because my freaking San Diego State prediction was so bad, like everybody else was in their staff. 27-0 gives
Well,
me.
speak for yourself. I had Ohio winning that game.
Fine, whatever. Good for you.
Okay.
Mo, I said most. I didn't say all. I said most. I'm gonna take Hawaii to win like 31-27, something kind of close.
I think it's going to be a real back and forth game. My only concern is that we've seen Hawaii struggle more often than not against good to great defenses.
That's true.
Like we saw them struggle to move the ball against BYU, Nevada,
Wyoming.
Fresno State, Utah State. And while, I don't know if Louisiana is quite on that same level, if they're a Nevada type defense, I think
Makes
that's going to
sense,
make it
yeah.
really, I think that's going to make it really difficult for Hawaii to move the ball consistently. I think it's going to be close, just like all the prognosticators say. I think I'm going to go with La Tech on this one, though.
Ooh. Okay, but can anybody stop John Ursua? John Ursua.
That's going to be really interesting to watch. I think it's going to be close, though. I'm going to say La Tech 24, Hawaii 21.
I can see that too. It's going to be close. I was maybe going back, the defensive factor is the thing, but also I would say the offense for La Tech isn't outweigh the benefits of playing Hawaii defense. But
I
all
mean,
right.
to me, I see this as the kind of game where Hawaii wins the time of possession battle, wins the total offense battle, maybe runs more plays than La Tech does, but isn't able to finish consistently.
Gotcha. All right, are we ready to move on to the next game?
I think so.
Boise State hosting, not hosting, jeez. They're the ranked team, the home team, Boston College, ESPN, the Serve Pro First Responders Bowl. So, is this a bowl game to honor? I think first responders get free tickets, right?
I believe so,
So, if
yeah.
you're a firefighter in the area, if you are an EMT, I assume police officer, anybody who's brave enough to go to see a car crash and be the first guy to help people out, good on you. And you could go enjoy a good, take the day off, right? Stay after Christmas. Go hang out. Go to a 12:30 kickoff at the dilapidated Cotton Bowl.
There you go.
Or let me rephrase that, the historic Cotton Bowl, Matt. That stadium's a dump. Sorry, it's terrible. This is a middle of the day game. That kind of sucks for some people, right?
Well, I mean, if you're looking to work off the Christmas hangover of all the delicious food and things like that,
Not ham.
hey, might as well, right?
Exactly. So BC at Boise, taking on Boise State, 2.5 point favorite. Over under's a low 56. I don't see this game being close at all because Boston College is meh, right?
I think that's fair to say.
Because they lost to an average North Carolina State team this year. They beat Temple before Temple decided to figure out they're actually decent. They're coming off three straight losses. And to put on top of it, they lost to freaking Florida State, who's not good this year at all.
I don't know if I agree all the way with that. I think it's more that when you look back at what they did this year, they finished 7-5, 4-4 in the ACC. Mm-hmm. Would it be fair to say they beat the teams you would expect them to beat and lost to the teams that were just better than them?
For the most part.
Like if you want to look at a Mountain West analog, maybe mm-hmm. they're the ACC's Wyoming.
Yeah, that makes sense. That still doesn't mean, I could still say they're just a blah team, even by doing that.
I think it's kind of an interesting matchup because, you know, they're one of those teams where the offense, like we just talked about with La Tech, is nothing to write home about. You know, they're 95th overall as far as offensive S&P plus. But, you know, maybe if you're looking for another comparison, they're a little bit like San Diego State because the defense mm-hmm. is pretty good. You know, they rank 28th overall by S&P plus. You know, they're above average as far as defensive efficiency, preventing explosive plays, you know, preventing, you know, points per trip inside the 40, things like that. And that, I think, it's what it's going to make it a very interesting matchup for Boise, who we just saw them most recently in a very tough back and forth defensive driven Mountain West title game. And it's really been the defense that's kind of led the way pretty much down the stretch. You know, they gave up 24 points to Utah State in that regular season finale. But other than that, they've held opponents under 20 points per game. And so if I'm looking at the over-under for this game, I'm kind of tempted to take the under because I think it's going to be a defensive chess match.
Could be that. And then you're right with San Diego State because they're running back for the Eagles, A.J. Dillon, 1,100 yards, 10 touchdowns. He runs the ball pretty well. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be – and then – quarterback Anthony Brown, pretty good, 20 to 9 TD interception ratio. But you're right, it's going to be what was the under, 57? I said,
yeah, I believe you said it was 56.
56. So that could be right. I think I would say this: while Boston College defense is pretty good, do they have enough to stop like Cedric Will? Or not? Oh, geez, what am I getting at? Not Cedric Wilson, Alexander Mattison, who just crushes anybody who gets in his way and steamrolls defenses, even a great Fresno defense. Because is BC better than Fresno on defense? I don't think so.
I think you could make an argument that they're fairly similar.
And look what Madison did against them. Let him run the ball and just go, see ya, folks. Give him 50 carries. Why not, Matt? Can he have 50 carries in this game?
I mean, I don't know if that would necessarily be good for his health.
No, it would not.
I think it's more likely to be a slog in the same way that it was in that Mountain West title game. Because while, you know, he did get a lot of carries, let's not forget, he only had a long of 14 yards in that mm-hmm. game.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me to see them lean on Madison again. But Boston College's front seven does have quite a bit of productive talent up front. You know, they don't necessarily stand out in the way that La Tech does, but they're still top 40 as far as defensive line havoc rate. I'm very interested to see what someone like Zach Allen does. Mm-hmm. You know, 15 tackles for loss, 6.5 sacks. Him versus Ezra Cleveland is a matchup that I'm very much interested in watching.
That will be, and they also got Wyatt Rain, who's up there as well, with 12 TFLs, a couple of sacks mm-hmm. themselves. They have a couple of guys, like actually 9 sacks. Whew, I didn't realize there's that many. Okay, 4 versus Wake Forest. Does that really count for 2 sacks if you get 4 versus Wake Forest?
Well, and Tanner Caraffa also has 8.5 tackles for loss.
They get to the quarterback. They get to the backfield. That's what you're telling
me. They get into the backfield. So it wouldn't surprise me if Boston College racks up a lot of TFLs, but Alexander Mattison, for instance, is able to, you know, have a pretty solid opportunity rate in the same way that he did in that Mountain West title game. I think, you know, they may bottle him up for 1 or 2 yard loss, but he may also get 5 or 6 yards on the next play. And I think that whichever team gets the upper hand up front is probably going to dictate how the team goes, or how that game goes, rather.
Sure. And also, I think this could be where good old play action could come into play.
Maybe.
Because if they're getting TFLs back there, get the obviously play action, fake the handoff, draw the guys in for seconds, that could be something. And also, don't forget, this is Brett Rippon's final game for Boise State.
That's true.
And he's been a 4-year starter. The Montel Cozart saga is still haunting some people, me, because it was stupid. But this will be his final game, and he wants to go on top. They wants to win. They also lost the title game because they're playing a P5 school, but you probably figured rather be in Vegas – this bowl game, they're in town now, so they're in Dallas for Christmas, which is kind of crappy. Where you're not that you're in Dallas, but you're over Christmas break or the actual holiday down there, and not at home and having fun doing what you're doing. But Boston College, you said they beat who they beat, but who they beat still wasn't very good teams, right? Like, you're beating up on UMass, you're beating up on Wake Forest, Temple, Louisville's a mess, Miami's terrible, Vautech's okay. They only beat, if I'm correct on here, they beat, what, two bowl teams? Is that it? Maybe three?
Let's see. Wake Forest is a bowl team, right?
Wake Forest.
Temple.
Temple. And
Miami.
Miami made a bowl
and,
game?
And I thought so.
Oh, I'm double-checking on that.
And Virginia Tech, so I think that's four.
Okay, never mind. My apologies. I thought it wasn't that many. But they're all like 7-5 teams. I'll still go back and say, because Vautech had to beat the makeup game to get to 6 wins. So, But again, like, who they beat, like, yeah, they're beating who they beat, but again, who they beat was not very good either. Like, they get blown out versus Syracuse. They get blown out versus Clemson. And so, and this, when you compare them to Boise State to who they play in their schedule, like, was Syracuse the most comparable team, just kind of maybe talent overall?
I mean, I think up until that finale against Syracuse, you could make a case that they've been pretty tough against the pass.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was actually only one game this year where they didn't have an interception, and that was when they lost to Purdue and they gave up 3 touchdowns. Other than that, you know, their opponent's passer rating is only 117.88, which is pretty good, all things considered. You know, they held both Louisville, who admittedly is not very good, in Miami, who had quarterback issues of their own, held both of those teams under 50%. They held Florida State, DeAndre Francois, under 50% completion rate as well. So it's not like they don't have the talent to be able to slow down Sean Monster and A.J. Richardson and company. I'm very interested to see how they move people around in their defensive backfield, because, you know, the guy who really jumped off the stat sheet is, who am I looking at? Tajamir Torres, you know, senior cornerback, 3 interceptions, 11 pass breakups, but he's not even a starter on the 2 deep. So I think it's more likely he's going to be challenging whoever's on the inside playing the slot for, you know, Boise State in this game. So he's going to, you know, are they going to keep him inside? Are they going to move him outside and switch him with Brandon Sebastian or Hamp Cheevers? They've got playmakers back there. Hamp Cheevers, by the way, do you realize he has 7 interceptions?
Yeah, about to mention that, leads the nation in interceptions with a touchdown as well.
So this could very easily be the kind of game where
Madison, give it to him all night.
Yeah, it could be the kind of game that's a lot like the San Diego State game, which maybe if I'm giving Boise State fans PTSD or something like that, I apologize. But it's the kind of game where it could easily get bogged down by turnovers if Brett Rypien isn't careful.
It's always a possibility. Just don't screw up the snap. Get a nice handle on the ball. Take your time. Laces out to kick the field goal. We don't need any punting issues either. But yeah, passing game is a concern. So that's why I said give it to Madison. And then if he starts going, that'll change your defense. That's where you bring in the play action to, A, get the cornerbacks or defensive backs. They're good players, so they're not going to always fall for it. But you take that the hitch, the half step. You get somebody behind them. You get open. Or you do a screen pass. If they're doing the blitz and doing a pass blitz or run blitz to come after you, you want to go after a quarterback, just do a little screen pass. There's things they can do, but I think their main thing is to run the ball, and that I think will be the way they'll win. And then once they establish that, other thing, they have too many good players to be bogged down to not be able to run or pass. Not saying they'll do it at will, but they should be fairly successful at any aspect on offense. It's just protecting Rypien is a big deal. And then maybe challenge the passing game early on to see what these guys can do, but I think they should go with the run, get that going, and then build that out to more of a open up the field to other type of passing opportunities they see that fit them.
Well, another thing that could make a big difference in this game is how often Boise State's pass rush can get home. This, to me, is the kind of game where Durant Miles, Jabril Frazier, and Curtis Weaver could have a huge influence, because one of the things that Boston College really struggled with down the stretch in their losses against Syracuse, Florida State, and Clemson is protecting Anthony Brown. In all three of those games, they allowed multiple sacks. And that has been a strength of Boise State's all year long, is being able to bring down the quarterback. So if they can get to him, you know, that's another one of those ways that I think Boise State is more likely to disrupt both Boston College's offensive flow. It gives them one more way, I think, to create turnovers, which I think is going to be especially important in this game because both of these teams have been really proficient at that. But I think Boise State's a little more versatile in how they've been able to do that in 2018.
All right, so anything else you add about this game, or should we get to prediction time?
I think we could probably get to
I
predictions.
just want to see. Well, we'll get to it in a minute. Prediction here again, -2.5 Boise State, which seems a bit low. Seriously, why is this game even projected to be that close? I know we discussed it all, but Boston College offense against his Boise defense doesn't scare me at all. So, besides AJ Dillon, who can run pretty well, but. It is a also Matt, if you want to go to the game, only $13. Just saying.
That's not bad. That's a nice Christmas gift.
There you go. If you're in the Dallas area, go get some tickets. All right, so Number Fire predicts a close one. Interesting. 31-8 to 30.9 in favor of Boise. 28-9, 26-3 in team rankings, and it's a toss up to who will get to cover the spread.
Yeah, S&P Plus has this at Boise State 32, Boston College 23.
That's kind of where I'm leaning a little bit, I think. Oh wait,
So what do
over
you got?
under. Wait, hold on. Over under. Wait a second. Did I say 55 or
You said
65?
56.
Okay, no, sorry. I go to the. There's another a new page where it kind of breaks down like a little screen. When I do the, if you see what I do for our kind of projections or picks, there's a little area that it's a different page. I'm like, I thought for some reason it was 60. No, it's 55 and a half, which is low. But I think it'll be somewhat close. I'm not saying Boston College is a rollover opponent because they're not, but I also don't think they're. They just don't impress me. They just do. Enough good things on defense. They have some good playmakers in secondary. They run the ball. I think it'll be like, I'll go 28-20 Boise State.
If you like defense, this is the game for you.
So Daniel and Fresno is probably understanding why I'm not liking this game too much.
Yeah,
But I think there'll be defensive plays, but I'd say 28-20 is still fine. That's still some defense, right?
I think it's going to be a little bit lower than that. I do like Boise State's offensive potential because it could very well be the kind of thing where all they need is one big play. And if I'm going to bet on one team or the other coming up with that one big play, I'm definitely betting on Boise State.
Tyler Horton pick six. Let's call it now.
So I'm going to go Boise State 17,
Whew.
Boston College 10.
You're not gonna work off that Christmas Day stuff with this with the 17-10 game or seven. Oh, sorry, what's 17? What 10?
17 to 10.
Sorry, 17-10. That's not gonna work anything off. That's okay though.
I
There's multiple games that day, I think, so you should be fine, right?
think so, yeah.
You can follow that up with the lovely Minnesota Georgia Tech Quick Lane Bowl or. The nightcap, Cal versus TCU in the Cheez-It Bowl. Get a bowl full of Cheez-Its, which are a superior snack, and go at it.
All right.
All right, so that's it for this game here. Let's go on to the next game. So we both have Boise State winning, both covering, and now let's move on to the final game here. The final bowl game of bowl season is Arkansas State versus Nevada. It is on CBS Sports Network, so. We get that Fubo and candy for you folks to get your free trial for this particular game if you don't have it. That's what I use because my cable package is annoying, so I get my free trial and then cancel. You can do the same, right, Matt? All right, so it is what time zone is Arizona on at the moment? Do you know?
Well,
They change.
according to, well, let's just put it this way. According to College Press Box, it's saying 11:15 a.m. Mountain Time.
That's they're probably Mountain Time then. So
So 10:15 a.m. Pacific.
So whatever it is in Arizona, check your local listings. I don't know. We'll find out what time it is in Arizona in a second here. But CBS Sports Network, Arkansas State's a 1-point favorite over Nevada. Arkansas State is 8-4 from the good old Sun Belt Conference, and this game, the over under 57.5. Let me tell you now, take the over.
You think so?
Have you seen Justice Hanson? What he can do throwing the ball?
I have.
He has 3,172 yards and 27 touchdowns.
I think you might be underestimating Nevada's defense a little bit.
I might be, but I'm just saying, take the over. Oh, also, maybe, or should, actually, before we get to that, we actually should put more pertinent news. McClain Mannix, not playing, transferring.
No, he is officially at Texas Tech.
Oh, that's where he ended up going? Oh, I saw that the
Yeah.
other day. I don't know why I
He
missed it.
went home to go be closer to his mom.
That's right. Okay, and we talked about that, so that's a perfect place for him. And then
And
also,
Nephi Sewell at
yes,
BYU.
not a shocker either. So called both of those. So I get whatever that is worth for you folks. So yeah. Those are two of the better players. So maybe the give me guarantee, take the over right now is not, shouldn't be implied because losing one of your best receivers is a big deal. But I still think there could be a lot of points in this game. And you're right, Nevada's defense has been playing better. Like Malik Reed gets the quarterback. They have been doing good things, like played San Jose State 12 points, 10 points versus CSU, 22 allowed versus Hawaii, 24 versus SDSU, which is, it's okay. They've been doing good. It's just that weird losing to UNLV is kind of odd, right?
I think you might also be underrating Arkansas State's defense a little bit, too.
Am I underrating everybody today?
Maybe just a touch. I mean, because I think the story of Arkansas State's season is that while they weren't quite in the same tier of Sunbelt teams as like an Appalachian State or a Troy or something like that, they did finish 8-4, and they lost to Georgia Southern, they lost to App State, they lost to eventual West Division winner Louisiana Lafayette. But I think they put it together and they played pretty well down the stretch. After giving up 47 points against the Raging Cajuns, mm-hmm. they haven't allowed more than 17 points in their last four games. And so, granted, maybe some of that has to do with the level of competition, because I don't know what you would call their best win in November. South Alabama, maybe? I don't know.
What, they're like a three-win South Alabama team.
They beat South Alabama, Coastal Carolina, Louisiana Monroe, and Texas State down the stretch.
And convincingly as well, scoring over 30 points in each game, so you got to give that credit too. They scored 35 or more points since midseason on their final seven games.
And they do have a lot of talent on defense. Yeah, I think like La Tech, like Boston College that we've talked about, the defensive line havoc rate for Arkansas State, they rank third in the country. And
that's good, right?
Yeah, they've got a lot of talent up front. Ronheen Bingham, for instance, has 18.5 tackles for loss to lead the team. But it's not just him. Kevin Thurman has 11 tackles for loss, 3.5 sacks. Forrest Merrill has 7.5 tackles for loss, 4 sacks. William Bradley King, 8.5 tackles for loss, 6 sacks. They've got a lot of playmakers up front. So it's just as likely as the offense. It's just as likely that the offenses are able to dictate how this game goes as it is for the defenses to dictate how it goes.
All right. You know why I say Justice Hanson's going to be great? Over his final four, during the four-game winning streak to close the regular season, I know we mentioned the competition not great, 77 completion percentage rate, 1,100 yards, and 12 touchdowns to no interceptions. So I know the teams aren't great, but that's a pretty good stretch. That's about almost 300 yards per game. And
I think you could say something roughly similar to Ty Ganji too, because on a per game basis, the only person in the conference to throw more down the stretch in November was Cole McDonald. He in three games he averaged about 37 attempts per game, and he did have a passer rating of 155, 7 touchdowns. Maybe the 4 interceptions don't help, but I think it's fair to say that, even without Mannix out wide, that Ganji is going to be able to keep Nevada in this game as long as they can keep him upright. I think that'll be the big challenge for both teams in this game.
That's obviously for any team. You don't sack the quarterback, or if you get the quarterback sacked or don't sack the quarterback, that's going to be a big deal. So did you know this? A couple of fun stats as I'm kind of going over the game. 8 straight winning seasons for Arkansas State. Mm-hmm. So they're not a team that's come out of nowhere. And they've been good. They played Utah State. Didn't they beat UNLV this year as well?
Yes.
UNLV, they played Boise in the past. Remember, they were a team in Sunbelt that won 5 straight conference titles with 5 different head coaches, mm-hmm. including Brian Harsin, who was a head coach for a year there. But they're not very good in bowl games because they are playing better competition. So what am I saying to Nevada? Like, who's going to take over for McLean Mannix? Who's going to be that top receiver on their team or take his spot for what he's doing? That is something they need to kind of find out, which they've known for a while. He wasn't going to be around for transferring, but he's still going to find somebody, right, to catch the ball, to do what he can do, because he was their leading receiver, 7 touchdowns, 50 catches.
I mean, I think that's true to an extent.
Yardage-wise, I guess, because Caleb Folsom at 69, so...
I just think it's more likely that someone like Caleb Fossum, who, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly, last I checked, he wasn't listed in the starting lineup. He's probably going to step up into that position. And it's not like he wasn't seeing a lot of work all season long, too. Like, Mannix and Fossum actually had the same number of targets. and Fossum ended up with a better catch rate, more catches. So even though he wasn't quite the big play receiver that Mannix was, yeah, he still played a factor in how successful the offense was, but it's going to be that big play guy that I think is going to make the difference. If I'm looking to one guy to replicate that, it's going to be Elijah Cooks.
He's yeah, six touchdowns within a yard of the per catch, not catch rate, but average at 16. I just think you're right. It'll be him, but it's not going to change too much because they have enough guys. It's not going to be because it's not like say the Arizona State situation where Harry's the only guy. Henry, excuse me. They have multiple guys who catch the ball. So yeah, losing Mannix is fine, but they have a guy like you mentioned it with Cooks who can step up and maybe only gets four catches for 60 yards. That's going to be huge. It could be something like that. So they're not dedicated to having one main receiver. They have really even if Mannix were playing, four legit targets, four legit really good receivers who are going to catch the ball and do quite well when they do get the ball and they can score touchdowns because all these guys have scored one more than one touchdown. I guess what's his name? Dobbs or not Dobbs, but Folsom has just the one. But if you look at like you mentioned with Cooks, six touchdowns, 22 catches, six touchdowns. So they're going to be fine. It's just who's going to be not to take his place, but there's what I'm saying. There's enough guys that it's not going to be a huge issue with him being gone because they have multiple playmakers who can catch the ball. And then hey, maybe they'll give it to Tua for 15, a few more carries, or maybe he'd give him an extra reception or target in the backfield.
I mean, I don't see why not.
And yeah, so why not? Go for it. Do it.
Although it's really interesting because while the Arkansas State DBs also rank in the top 20 as far as havoc rate is concerned, a lot of that doesn't necessarily have to do with pass breakups. Like nobody on the Red Wolves has more than seven pass breakups on the year, and that's Jerry Jacobs at cornerback. If he's locking down one of the outside receivers, this could be another instance where whoever's on the inside for Nevada could make a huge difference. Because I think a lot of the havoc rate, which not only encompasses passes defended, it encompasses forced fumbles, and I think in this case, especially tackles for loss. So, I mean, you mentioned Tawa as someone who could come in and make a difference. It's kind of surprising how many TFLs a lot of Arkansas State's defensive backs have. Like Darian Jackson, for instance, he doesn't have any interceptions on the year. He only has two pass breakups, but he has 6.5 tackles for loss.
So they do the corner blitz, is that what you're telling me?
It could, yeah, and Justin Clifton, for instance, has only two interceptions, five pass breakups, but he has 5.5 tackles for loss. It's going to be really interesting to see how they challenge this defense.
What do you think they'll do though? Like, how challenge in what way?
I mean, I'm more interested in seeing whether they elect to take whether they continue to take shots down the field even without Mannix.
They
In which
should,
case,
right? Yeah.
like I said, someone like Cooks can make a huge difference. Or, as you suggested, if they try and stay balanced instead and really lean on Toa Taua, which in that case, then you're running up against a front that has been very efficient against the run pretty much all season long. It's going to be, I think, a tough road to hoe either way.
Will be, but like I mentioned, Tao has 20 receptions this year. So
That's
maybe
true.
they said give him, not that it's going to make a difference, but if they are bringing in corner, like if they're going to do a corner blitz, maybe work in those quick passes off the line of scrimmage. Like if they
That's
can
true.
notice or do a pump and go, pump fake and see that guy come in and realize, oh crap, a guy's coming and make some sort of either a quick slant or just do something if they notice that coming through. Just watch, basically watch for it because you can do a few things to counteract to not tip the defense off. But you can, if they're doing a corner blitz, you can sort of sometimes tell when they're coming in. So if
Well,
they, and so they, sorry, there's just ways where give a little fake that way or do something to real, oh, he's coming. If they can see where it's coming from or know who has, or they know because they're doing film, if they know where it's coming from, not that you avoid away from it, but take advantage of a guy blitzing through and run some sort of play to. Don't want that guy to be a factor, so you're playing 11 on 10 instead of 11 on 11. Sorry, what was your thought then, or did I just kind of ram through what you're going to say or something?
No, I mean, I think it's gonna be, I think it's a fair argument to use the screen game to kind of keep them off balance. And not only Tawa, but Kelton Moore, who we haven't really talked about at all this year, he also has 20 catches out of the backfield. And so maybe that's the kind of thing where both of those guys, you know, can keep Arkansas State off balance on defense. They can use that aggressiveness against them to be able to set themselves up to take shots down the field.
It's true. So, well, let's get to our score prediction here because we've gone through a decent 10 or so minutes. That's fine for these games here. We're doing individual podcasts, or you get a full long one for this. So, this is going to be like, I think it's going to be a pretty good bowl game. There's a reason it's a 1-point line in favor of Arkansas State. It's a game where, like, oh, you're playing Sun Belt. But Arkansas State, like you mentioned, they're pretty good. They've winning seasons. They're accustomed to winning conference titles. Also, did you know this game is more expensive to get in than the BC game? It's $36.
I did not know that.
And also, did we mention it's at Arizona Stadium, Tucson, where they have dorm rooms inside the stadium there?
I didn't know that either.
They do. I've been to Tucson a couple of times for stuff back in the day, and they yeah. It's yeah, so prediction time. What does S&P Plus have for this matchup?
So S&P Plus has it at Arizona State 32, or excuse me, not Arizona State. What am I
No,
thinking?
Arkansas.
Arkansas State
In
30,
Arizona, that's what we're
32,
playing.
Nevada 27.
32, okay. Team ranking 28.7, 27.8 for Arkansas State.
Okay.
But then the number for ours is kind of a blowout, and relatively speaking, 35.5, or excuse me, 33.5 to 27.6. What's your prediction? You go first.
I'm going to take Nevada.
Okay.
I think this among the three bowl games that haven't taken place yet is maybe the most unpredictable one.
I agree. And could be most exciting too.
I think that nothing about the result would surprise me, but I like Nevada to be able to win a close one. I'm going to say Wolfpack 31, Red Wolves 28.
31-28. Because looking at Nevada, like they've had a combination of close wins and close losses this year. Like they nearly beat Boise State, they lose to UNLV, they close one versus San Jose State. I'm gonna go Nevada too because I think too many weapons. Like even though Mannix is out, they'll be fine. But I think he's gonna be close. I'm gonna go 28-20. I can yeah, I'll go 28-27 Nevada.
All right.
A real squeaker, 1 point, and they'll get me the cover, I guess too, because it's 1 point for the Red Wolves. All right, so that's our bowl preview for the final set of game or games or game, depending if how you're listening to this, because we're breaking up these previews here. So we will be back to recap these probably right after the new year, since we're doing all these games at once here. So check back for us about that time. We will be doing fun off-season stuff like stupid early January predictions, because why not, Matt? Right?
Why not? Indeed.
It's what we do here. So check us out all the time. MWWire.com on Twitter, MWCWire, Facebook, Mount West Wire. We're just chugging along. Also, hey, Matt, we're going to have soon our Mountain West at 20.
That's true.
Are you excited for that?
I am.
Have you given any thought about who should be on the Fresno State All Mountain West team?
I have not.
Okay, because we're going to need to work on that pretty soon because it'll take some time. I'll say this, we started a couple teams, Boise. I've done some Air Force. I think we're going to go too deep. Is that? I think that's good enough, right, for each
Yeah,
team.
that's fair.
And then
That's
we're gonna have an
fair.
all-time all-conference team. Can I just tell you right now, basketball, it is going to be Jimmer Fredette, the best player ever. So anybody who says otherwise, sorry, that's going to be the case because it's hard to argue anybody else, right? For basketball, football, I have no clue who football would be. Really quick, who would you say the best offensive player ever for the Mountain West would be in football?
Oh man, that's tough.
We don't have to answer now. I just threw it out there because of this stuff.
Okay, well, that's a question I'm gonna have to think about at some
I'll
point.
tell you one player who could be in the mix, Donald Pumphrey, back-to-back Offensive Player of the Year. I think the only one to do it in conference history. I had to double check, but I know he won it twice. So that's a good place to start, I guess. But that's our show for today. We'll get to that. That'll last from January to like maybe June, we're thinking, folks. So that'll be a long, fun time of all sorts of randomness and complaining and trophy bragging and whatever else we can come up with, right? All right, so that's it for this one. Again, iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. Give us a review if you want. Prefer at least 4 stars. Can we just lower the minimum amount to say at least 4 stars?
Yeah, let's do that.
We don't need five before, it'd be great. So if you do that, cool. Tell a friend. That'd be even better. So we'll see you. I guess a Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and see you next time, folks.